Hey there, welcome to the Public Health Podcast, Healthy Schmelty, helping you stay healthy by sorting out all the schmelty in the healthcare news. I'm a career healthcare information specialist and also a master's of public health. I'm Rishi B. Thank you very much for joining me. And how am I doing? Well, thank you for asking. That's very polite of you. Wow. I didn't know you could ask me questions through this audio wormhole that we're connected via. Is that an accurate way of describing this? I'm doing well. Thank you for asking me. In this last episode of my podcast, I shared the news. My lovely wife, Benafsa, and I shared the news that we had a beautiful COVID Christmas baby. And, you know, one thing that's interesting that they don't really talk about, I feel like, I mean, they joke about it, but it's just like the lack of sleep. And, you know, these babies, they got to eat all the freaking time. And I don't know, it just didn't quite lay onto me just how much sleep I wouldn't be getting. And when you talk to like nurses and doctors, they're all like, yo, yeah, yep, you're not going to sleep. Oh, you know, interesting side note, sleep deprivation is a torturing technique used in many civilized gentlemanly parties. Sleep deprivation, that's like torture. Isn't that great? Okay, well, good luck out there. Yeah, people are just joking about how much sleep new parents aren't going to have. And that's not cool, man, because I really need some sleep. Hey, let's move forward with this podcast, though. Thank you for joining me once again on this episode. And on this episode, I'm going to be sharing a conversation that I had with Jason Robbins, who goes by Jay Fantastic on the interwebs. He's a comedian and also a former EMT. Jason and I, we became friendly over Twitter, and he shared a tweet about this news. This news got completely drowned out by just the whole, just everything else going on in the world. But in response to the events that happened earlier in 2020 with George Floyd and multiple other people who've been affected by police, in response to that, a lot of cities have been doing some stuff to address that, to address their police and their gun-related deaths, preventable gun-related deaths. And San Francisco, they made a pretty big action where they're changing their emergency 911 system to send staff who are specifically trained for behavioral health, as opposed to sending armed police to de-escalated situations. So I thought this was pretty interesting, and Jason has some opinions about how this will work for a 911, whether or not it's valuable to have de-escalated 911 responders going into a situation, the impact of just having a gun with you going into one of these situations. And keep in mind, this was recorded in 2020. This is actually just for a little behind the curtains. This is the last interview I recorded in 2020, and it took me forever to get out just with having a baby now. Everything is delayed. But so keep that in mind. But I thought this conversation is really interesting because percolating under the surface beneath just the cluster that's going on in America's government, there's a lot of conversation about how nothing has really been done for police reform. So I think this is going to be a really great conversation. And hopefully everyone gets something to take away from this. Later on in this episode, I'm also going to share about what we know about COVID now has changed since we first got COVID thrust into our lives. And at the end of this episode, I'm going to share a beautiful song. It's absolutely a beautiful song from an anti-circumcision advocate. Before I share the conversation I had with Jason, a quick note that music for this episode is from the recently deceased rapper MF Doom. He was a guy who came up in the underground rap scene in the early 2000s, and that's when I was going to college. So underground rappers, those are like perfect for new college, for undergrad people such as myself. And he just completely blew my brain open. I just love this guy. He wore a mask everywhere. And he was just always kind of like, he purposely kept himself under the radar. He didn't want too much noise from his like personal life getting into there. And so much so that his death, no one really knew about his death until his family publicized it in December, but he had died in end of October. But, you know, this guy, he's such a great rapper. And in the show notes for this episode at rishibi.com, I'm going to share a video that a music service called Genius, they did talking about how MF Doom is like a prolific rapper just with the amount of rhymes that he can pack into one bar. So let's get into my conversation now with Jason Robbins. This first song that we're going to hear from MF Doom is Doomsday. So I turned it up faster than a speeding knife, strong enough to please a wife, able to drop today's math in the 48 keys of life. Cut the crap for his rap, touch the mic and get the same thing an A-Rab would do to you for stealing. What the devil, he's on another level. It's a word, no a name, MF the super villain. All right, and I'm here with Jason, who goes by many fantastic names on Twitter. Hey there, Jason.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, doing all right. Thanks for joining me. And, you know, Jason, we became kind of organic friends through Twitter, which is kind of cool. We were liking each other's tweets. And the reason that I asked you here today is I saw you tweet something out that, you know, just with the cluster that 2020 has been.
You could say that again.
Yeah. I feel like that news has just been completely washed out, but you tweeted out an article from NPR that was talking about how San Francisco is starting to deploy. And actually, I was looking this up after you tweeted more recently that they actually did go ahead and do this. But you tweeted out an article at the time that San Francisco was starting to prepare to deploy teams of professionals from fire and health departments, not police, to respond to most calls for people in behavioral health crises.
Yeah.
And, you know, outside of that article, actually, I looked this up more recently. There has been like zero news about this.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you were talking about it and, you know, it seemed really interesting, especially in the light of one of the things that added to this whole cluster was the George Floyd thing that happened earlier in the year. So let's go ahead and talk about that. You seem to have some personal experience with this whole situation and how EMTs might respond to these.
Yeah. Well, I was an EMT for a little over a year from 2011 to 2000, I think late 2011 to early 2013.
Okay.
Being an EMT kind of opens your eyes to, you know, the way things work. And the reason I'm not an EMT anymore is because I went into the medical industry with the best intentions.
Sure.
Because I want to help people. And I had planned on to become I was an EMT basic, and then I was going to go to school through the company I was working for. They actually have their own academy. I was going to go and become a paramedic, and then I was going to work. Since they sent me to school, I would have to work for them for 2 years. Okay. Under contract. And then during that 2 years, I was going to go take what's called a bridge to RN and use my paramedic experience to help me get into the nursing program and then become a nurse after that. That was my plan. But once I got into the medical industry, it was very disheartening to learn what really is the medical industry.
Sure. And,
it's a lot of paperwork. It's a lot of, and I don't want to say anything that's going to incriminate anybody or me, but there's a lot of lying on paperwork,
sure.
because of like Medicare, Medicaid, just the absolute cluster that is our insurance system in this country, just to get them to pay for anything.
Yeah.
And I don't like lying, but at the same time, I don't want people to have to pay for things out of pocket that insurance companies should pay for, because that's what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. But I just wasn't comfortable with that. And I left after a little over a year. And like you said, there were a lot of things that I saw that could be improved as far as, you know, I got to meet a lot of the firefighters and police officers in the county and the city that I worked in. And, you know, I got a lot of respect for police officers, and mm-hmm. I'm a pretty liberal person. And people always scream at me because of like defund the police and stuff. But I honestly don't think we should defund the police. Honestly, I think we need to give them more money, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because we live in a world where police respond to every single 911 call that comes in,
right.
Which they should, because there are more police officers in the street than there are paramedics. Like the county that I worked in, there was, for the entire county, there was maybe 5 trucks normally at one time,
okay,
to cover an entire county. So, you know, people would get angry with us ambulance guys because it would take us so long to get to some of the rural places. And it's like, well, we don't have a truck sitting on every corner. You know, sometimes we're 20, 30 miles, the closest truck is like 20 miles away.
Right.
And it's hard to get there. But police officers are everywhere. You know, it takes them within 5 minutes to get anywhere.
Yeah.
So they're, you know, most police officers are trained in first aid, and so are the firefighters. So they would normally get there before we would, and they would be administering first aid before we even got there, which makes our job a lot easier, you know. And
okay. So like in this situation, like San Francisco is doing, you know, where they're talking about kind of determining a violent situation versus mm-hmm. a non-violent situation first. And they're talking about like they're going to determine if it's non-violent first, and then they would send unarmed professionals there. So you brought up a point that, and actually now that you say that, I don't know why I didn't think about this earlier, because this is something I hear from a lot of different areas, that there's just not enough ambulance to go around. So could it be like,
well, the thing
depending
that
people
don't get is most places like where I live, and I'm not sure about like bigger cities like New York or whatever, if they might have their own ambulance services, but ambulance services are private businesses. They're not city run, or they're not government. They're not government run, like, you know, like police officers, like the police department is a city run and city financed thing. So is like firefighters. They're run by like the cities and the counties. Most ambulance companies are private businesses.
Okay. Yeah. You know, and actually New York, I saw recently, they do have a city owned police, but even, or sorry, city owned ambulance.
Yeah.
But even with that, there wasn't enough to go around.
Well, it's impossible to have as many, you know, with that many people. I mean, it was hard to have enough trucks like in the small, you know, Mississippi. You know, we're right along the coastline, so we've got a good bit of the population here along the Gulf Coast. But even for just the one, you know, county we're in, it was a lot. It's a lot of people for what little, you know, emergency response you have. I can't imagine like some place like New York where there's a couple of million people, and like, you know, the law of averages, how many, you know, emergencies are you going to have per day with, I don't even want to think of those numbers.
Yeah. I can't imagine. But let's kind of, dig into something you brought up about how, you know, you like that the police go in, they know how to administer some basic first aid. And that kind of prepares a situation for the more medical professionals.
Yeah.
So like San Francisco, they're talking about determining, and actually I think it seems like a lot of cities are kind of looking to see how things play in San Francisco before possibly implementing it.
Well, that's
going
to be a lot to do with the dispatchers as well. They're going to have to assess the situation that comes in over the call.
Yeah. And actually I was wondering if, you know, based off your EMT experience,
You're touching on exactly what was like the first question that I thought of, and also I was asking my wife if she had any thoughts about this topic, and that was the first question she had too, is how do you determine what a non-violent situation sounds like?
Yeah.
Well, is there training?
Or? You can really tell. I mean, if somebody calls and there's like a domestic argument or whatever, and somebody's screaming that somebody's after them, that's obviously a violent call.
Sure.
But if somebody calls 911 for, say, you know, somebody is like we dealt with a lot of diabetics. And a lot of times with people that have severe diabetes or diabetes is, you know, their blood sugar will dip and go too far, and they'll have, you know, they'll mentally just be not who they are. Like they'll, you know, their mental acuity will be very diminished. And, you know, that's not a violent call, but you would have somebody maybe freaking out saying like this person is not, you know, talking correctly or whatever. So you can kind of tell with calls what is violent and what's non-violent. I'd say probably at least 75% of the time.
Okay. And so like you kind of mentioned having the police kind of go in first. So a dispatcher kind of determines this might be okay for, you know, this is a non-violent situation. We could send in a paramedic or something else.
Yeah.
I was wondering if there's any stories that stand out from your own personal experience with behavioral health patients where you think like, you know, it could have gone either way. Police going in this situation, like in San Francisco, where they have the choice to who to send first.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you had any stories that stand out from your experience.
Well, I had one that I was thinking about that really stuck out to me. We had gotten a call for a guy. He was like maybe late 20s, early 30s. He lived with his mother in the city that I live in, and it was the suburbs. And he apparently had schizophrenia, and he had stopped taking his medication without telling his mom. And he kind of went into an episode, and he was in the backyard. They had some, they had grapefruit trees in their backyard. So he was in the backyard. His shirt was ripped open, and he was just grabbing grapefruit out of the trees, ripping them open, like shoving them in his mouth, and then just throwing down the rinds. Like, and we get there, and the police are, and he wasn't being violent. He was talking, but he wasn't making any sense. Like he was just, I couldn't even begin to like pretend, like say what he was saying. It was just like, it was so out there, just, you know, like, I don't even know. Like it was just, he was saying words, but they weren't making sense. Right. And, so the police were back there when we got there, and, you know, they were being very forceful with him, like trying to corner him so that they could cuff him. Mm-hmm. And we showed up, and it was, and the paramedic immediately took charge and was like, look, there's obviously something, you know, mentally wrong with this guy. He's not hurting anybody. Just back off. And the guy started like it was really freaked out. And, the paramedic made the police officers actually leave the backyard. It was like, look, you guys, just we need to calm the situation down. Please just go, you know, go outside, like outside the yard. So they went back up front, and me and him just sat there and talked to the guy for a few minutes and calmed him down. And we walked him to the truck. You know, we were just like, look, he didn't understand what was going on. He was just completely out of his mind. And but he wasn't being violent. Like I said, he was just grabbing grapefruits off of trees and just saying weird things and eating the grapefruits and getting grapefruit juice all over himself. So we talked to him and we got him to get on the gurney, and then we took him to the hospital. And that was, you know, it kind of shocked me when we got there to see the police were being very like, you know, shouting at him and like, you know, get on the ground and like all this. And it's like, dude, just like, this is not, this doesn't call for that kind of thing. And, you know, there were other situations where it did call for that kind of thing, where we would, There was another situation where a guy took some kind of drugs. I don't even know what he was taking, but he apparently was sitting in the living room, freaked out, ran through the front door, which was a full plate glass door, and was running around the neighborhood all bloody. And he was, yelling at the police officers, and they were trying to run him down and they couldn't catch him. So they finally tased him. And when he hit the ground, he hit his face on the concrete. And so we had to show up and take him to the hospital to get his face looked at, because he landed face first on the concrete.
So in those two situations, it sounds like you weren't necessarily upset to have the police there, right?
No, not at all. Like I said, I honestly think we should give more money to the police departments, because I think there needs to be, like this San Francisco thing, there needs to be different divisions of the police department. There needs to be police officers who are the regular, because we ask too much of our police officers. That's the problem.
Sure.
They answer every single 911 call. They, deal with everything. We put everything on police officers, and that's just too much. I think there needs to be different divisions of police officer. I think there needs to be just the regular everyday police officer that's out there, writing tickets and, doing what police officers do, for fighting crime. Basically, we need to have different, police officers that are trained, maybe even have degrees in psychology, sociology, psychology, that are unarmed, that are and specialize in, different just different situations like domestic violence, those type of things where, like I said, there was that situation with the guy who was schizophrenic, like people who just have mental problems. And sometimes just, they break, and it's in the world we live in. You see it all the time. People just break. And
I was reading about the San Francisco plan, and they were talking about how there's like this large percent of calls that come in where it turns out it's like someone who's struggling with mental health.
Yeah.
And in the way that the data is, data kind of shows things in a very plain way. But the data was that there was like 20% of these situations with mental health patients that, because an armed person was there, it turned out to be a police officer who was armed, of course, they were there, and it turned into a fatal situation.
Yeah.
I wonder, like in the grapefruit schizophrenic patient that you were talking about, like, do the police and the EMTs, they kind of have different end goals? Is that fair to say when they come to a situation? Or
EMTs, especially paramedics, I had some training in how to de-escalate a situation, especially with someone like that. But paramedics go a little bit deeper and how to diffuse situations.
Okay.
And you'll see that a lot with paramedics, with people that are having not violent episodes, but they're just being very uncooperative. And you just have to use different psychological techniques on people to get them to do what you want them to do.
So, and you were talking about that with police, how your ideal, if you were the grand poobah of America, and you could design the police force, you would kind of have these like different classes of police.
And even the regular everyday police officer, I think we need to have more training for them. I think they need to do as an EMT, I would have to do 48 extra hours of CEU training to recertify every 2 years. I had to have 48 hours of, extra programs in order to recertify. But I think police officers, like I said, they need more money. We need to train them more, train them better. I also think we need to have classes available, like hire martial artists to come in and have classes. They have classes all day long for the police officers, and it's part of a police officer's pay to come in at least one day a week and train for whatever day they want, and train for a couple of hours in, you know, grappling and hand-to-hand combat, those type of things, like, you know, like mixed martial arts type of subduing type of training.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be interesting. I also imagined that that would be kind of a way to get some of your energy out. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I don't know. But, you know, you were talking about, we were kind of hovering around the topic of armed versus unarmed. And you know, this is kind of a very broad topic. And so feel free to take this however you want. But, you know, in this article, actually, about the San Francisco, they had kind of talked about how Europe, and actually beyond Europe too, there's a lot of countries that have unarmed police. Mm-hmm. So they're going into any situation with the goal of de-escalation. Do you think that makes a difference, being armed versus unarmed?
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of people freak out because they know that police officers are armed. Mm-hmm. You know, that's because, like I said, police officers do show up to every single 911 call, and not right. every call really calls for police officers. But it's good that they do show up, because you never know. Sometimes you never know what you're going to walk into. And like, that's why I say it's really going to be up to the dispatchers to kind of determine. But, you know, guns, we live in a country where we have a huge gun fetish, but there's still a lot of people that freak out when they see a gun, and police officers scare sure. a lot of people.
Sure.
You know, you walk yeah. in, you see a police officer walk in, they're intimidating. You know, even to me, I'm 6'3", 220 pounds. And there were some police officers there that, you know, were my size or bigger. And, you know, they walk in, they've got AR-15s or whatever, and like flak jackets, and you know, wow. like they're dressed all tactical, and it's like, whoa, this dude looks like he could kill me.
yeah, you know, okay, so it sounds like I'm not the only one, but like, you know, I see a cop car, or you know, just driving down the highway, I see like the state trooper or something. Man, my pits immediately yeah. just start sweating bullets, because I'm like, oh man, there could be you know, a Die Hard style
yeah.
you know, machine gun hidden in that car.
And that's the thing, whether you get pulled over, you never know what kind of police officer you're gonna get. It's yeah. like you're gonna get the guy that was just like, hey, you you're going a couple miles an hour over the speed limit, you know, be careful and don't do that anymore. And you're like, okay, and you just drive off, and then you get the other guy that's like got the mirrored sunglasses, and he's like pulling you out of the car by your throat, going, let me see your license and registration.
Bruce Willis, what are you doing? Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you. So, you know, I saw that the San Francisco police, in response to that plan, they put out a statement that they were kind of, you know, they're worried that they could see down the line is the dispatch kind of determining if a situation really is nonviolent. So like, it sounds like, based off of your experiences, there is some pretty good coordination between, you know, between the EMTs and the police, like in the schizophrenic patient you were talking about, your colleague that was with you, they kind of, you know, ask the police to kind of stand out a bit.
Yeah. I think they're really going to be able to tell, you know, black and white, you know, but like they're going to be able to tell a call for a violent call from a nonviolent call at least 75% of the time. The other times they're going to be like, let's bring the other police in too. Okay. We don't know what's going on. So, you know, it's above my pay grade, but at the same time, yeah. I mean, it doesn't hurt to try it.
Yeah, totally.
Because we got to do something different. We're at a point in this country that things just, that when the population was a little smaller, you know, these things maybe worked better, but population is getting better, bigger, you know, there's cities are bigger, and just, you know, problems are like mental problems are way, you know, way more of them now than there used to be. I mean, maybe they're the same. I don't know, but it just, there just seems to be, we need to change some of the way we do things, especially, for sure, especially with the world we live in now. And police officers are constantly getting filmed, like just beating the shit out of people and killing people, like, yeah, George Floyd. Like, why is this happening? Like, you know, we live in a world where everything's being filmed now. Like, why are you still doing these things?
Yeah. And, you know, to your point that, you know, it doesn't have to be police versus, you know, if we start building more of these systems where there's like some people who are just trained mental health professionals versus aren't police, you know, there's a level of cooperation there that's existing right now, between EMTs and the police.
Yeah.
So we could build upon that to build a better system. I agree with you 100%. You know, I see some stats about like, hey, I'm forgetting the exact percentage, but if a mental health patient is involved in some 911 call, then there's like, you know, some like 30-40% chance they're just gonna get sent to a prison.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's, we can't continue down that route. There's got to be better ways for the mental health patients.
Yeah,
for sure.
We've got to, and I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what, if voting Democrat or Republican is going to fix either way, but we have to do something. This has to be a bipartisan thing in this country where we take mental health a lot more seriously. We start,
yeah,
we have to do some sort of healthcare in this country that's available to everyone, mm-hmm, especially mental health services. And that's the only way that this is going to get fixed. And people always want to scream at me, well, that's socialism. Well, we got to do something. And we've been trying that this one way for 200 years now, and we've gotten to a point where it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have to start taking care of each other instead of ourselves.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, that's a great conclusion. Jason, I appreciate you sharing your background with that. You know, I have a friend who was an EMT, and we were talking about some of his stories from his experiences. And one thing we were talking about is how it kind of seemed like the worst calls were from like a certain like zip code or like a certain like area.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I was wondering if, just kind of winding down, you know, if there's something that you think the public should be more aware about the people who typically call for 911, if there's anything that comes to mind.
I would say a lot of people that typically call 911 are people that can't afford to regularly go to a doctor. And they'll call the ambulance to take them to the emergency room and to get whatever medical things they need. And then, of course, you know, they end up not ever paying for the ambulance ride or the emergency room, because of course they can't pay for it. It's too expensive. Mm-hmm. And that ends up being more expensive for everybody else. And that's not right. We need to have a system in this country that takes care of everybody. Everybody should have access to at least a doctor and not have to worry about paying for it. And that's the thing. Like, the poorer people are, you know, they can't afford to go to a doctor when something's wrong. They wait until you absolutely have to go to the emergency room. And that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like, absolutely. I totally agree with you. If we kind of beefed up the healthcare system, that might just organically solve some of these other issues.
I think it would too.
Yeah.
It's kind of a base thing. I mean, that should be like, we're the richest country in the world. Taking care of our people, our citizens with healthcare is a no-brainer to me. And I don't see why that's such a political thing.
Yeah. You're preaching to the choir, man. Yeah. That's something. And, you know, kind of on the flip side, it really grinds my gears when I talk to some friends and family who aren't, you know, fortunately they didn't grow up poor or whatever, and they can afford to have healthcare insurance, afford to see the doctor, but they're just too scared to go to the doctor. Mm-hmm. And that just like really gets me because it's like, man, there's so many people out there who wish they could have the money that you have to afford it. And it's just, you know, beefing up the healthcare system hopefully will solve that problem as well, too.
Like, yeah, that's the thing. Even if you have health insurance, it's still going to cost you an arm and a leg. You know, I had two surgeries a couple of years ago for kidney stones, and I'm probably going to be – I have insurance, and I'm probably still going to be paying what part that I owe for the next 10, 20 years.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah, yeah, you're absolutely right. Having healthcare insurance right now doesn't necessarily make everything better.
It just gets you through the line faster.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's the fast pass. It's the Disney fast pass.
They're like, oh, we'll at least get 85% of what they owe us because we've got insurance.
Oh, man. That's sad, but it's true. You know, Jason, this topic, I knew it was going to be pretty, could be potentially heavy, and it was.
That's okay.
So kind of, yeah, exactly. No, these are important topics, and just with, like we were saying at the beginning, just with how just crazy this year has been, all these important topics have just been washed out from the news. So it's good that we can give it a little air.
We were talking about it before we started that my theory is that when they turned on CERN a few years ago in Switzerland to get to watch the what they call the God particle, I think it caused a black hole. We got sucked into it, and we're in a mirror universe now.
Yeah, and our only savior, that was a great callback to a news article, by the way. The CERN thing. Our only savior is Doc Brown flying out of nowhere on his train to save us and bring us to the right timeline.
Marty. We got to go back.
My name's Rishi, Doc. I don't care. You're Marty.
Oh, man. I've never in my entire life thought that. I always thought by 2020 we would have like flying cars and it would be like the Jetsons. But, man, I didn't know it was going to be like damn near an apocalypse.
Yeah. Is that wild? Yeah. I remember years ago I was watching Scooby-Doo and they were in the year 2020. And, you know, they're making that show in the late 70s or whatever. Right. And so their idea of the year 2020 was actually, I don't even think it was 2020. I think it was the year 2000. You know, the whole entire world was just like one big like robot sphere, you know, and flying cars and computer droids everywhere. And it was like, wow, that's a very optimistic idea of 20 years from now.
Yeah, I thought I would at least have a droid by now, you know?
Yeah.
Like a C-3PO running around.
Not C-3PO. I want R2.
Yeah, I want R2. He needs to do like mix drinks for me and like fix my car when it goes wrong, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Jason, you've been really gracious with your time. Really appreciate sharing some of your experiences and your thoughts.
Oh, no problem, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, yeah, no problem. Before we go, I want you to share what shows you got going on, but I also want you to answer a somewhat silly question.
Okay.
So share what you got going on, but also I want you to share, I'll leave it up to you, favorite Pink Floyd song or favorite Pink Floyd album based off of you recently talking to a Pink Floyd touring artist in your podcast.
Well, as far as Pink Floyd, most people would expect me to say Dark Side of the Moon, but I think my favorite Pink Floyd album is probably Wish You Were Here. I really like that album.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, speaking of that, I have another podcast that I do called Open Micers at Open Micers on Twitter. And we recently talked to a guy named Scott Page, who was a member of Pink Floyd for a while in the late 80s, early 90s. He was also part of Supertramp, Toto, and he played saxophone for Diana Ross. And that was an awesome interview. So just go check that out at Open Micers. Also, I do a retro gaming show called at Nerd Cave Retro. Nerd Cave Retro, and it's at Nerd Cave Retro on Twitter. We just surpassed 200 episodes couple of weeks ago. And
congratulations.
Yeah, it's been we've been going at it since 2016 and still going strong, just past 200 episodes. And if you like retro games, you like retro gaming news, go check it out at Open Micers. And also, I am at JFunktastic on Twitter. That's my personal one.
Jason's a great Twitter follow. He changes his name like every month.
This month it's J Tryptofantastic is what it is this month.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think I'm gonna lift that. I think I'm gonna change my name too every month. We'll be the two guys changing.
Oh yeah, names. I gotta figure out a good Christmas pun this year.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's a good starting point for me.
I still got a few days before I do that, but I'll come up with a good one.
Yeah. Dark Side of the Moon. Going back to Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon is just hands down my favorite. It got me through college. Yeah. So
my problem with it is it's so I got so tired of hearing all the singles off of it from just not only like classic rock radio, but even like the local rock radio station, like back in the 90s and early 2000s. Like that, God, they would play, you know, almost every track from Dark Side of the Moon all day, every day, and just kind of got burnt out on it.
For sure. I know. I hear you. One of my favorite Beatles album is Abbey Road. And, one thing that I like, with those albums is even though they'll play the singles like repeatedly, you could listen to the tracks back to back and they all like, you know, sync with each other.
Yeah.
And you don't get that in every album. And so there's something about that, being able to listen to like 12 songs that like all like sync with each other.
Yeah.
You know, I could go from, I'm going to brain fart on the listing at Dark Side, but I usually do Eclipse it's Brain Damage then Eclipse. I like doing that, you know, having that journey of songs as opposed to just one song.
That's kind of something that's lost in music these days. There are a few bands that still do it. I mean, one of the most notable is Tool. They still kind of do that where, you know, kind of one song kind of bleeds into another. Like it's all one big kind of not narrative, but it all kind of fits together. Like you listen to the whole album. But nobody really does that anymore.
Yeah. Come on, Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
And Ariana Grande.
Don't get me started.
Wow, this has been a great show for me. I gained some music and talked about these police situations. But thank you very much, Jason, for joining me.
Oh, thank you.
More Healthy Schmelty in just a moment.
Fake history they erase, coming through the corridors of deep space. High beams, all I see in fine meaning, clairvoyant mind reading, nervous system, service wisdom, flow superior, determined rhythm, electricity, eccentricity, Afrocentric synchronicity. In the air, everywhere, taking over, chocolate conquering, supernova, educating, dominating, time deflating, bomb on Satan, wicked is gone, torn and shaking, force awakens.
It's time.
Back to the caves.
Okay, and so that song that we just heard was Chocolate Conquistadores by the recently deceased rapper MF Doom. And that conversation once again was with Jason Robbins, who goes by @JFunktastic on Twitter. I highly recommend following him and also checking out his Open Micers podcast, as he mentioned. And he streams old school video games on Twitch fairly frequently. He's a fun guy to follow, so I highly recommend doing that. You know, this conversation about police reform and our 911 emergency responder system, it's very complicated. There's multiple different angles to the question of how to best reform the police, or, you know, even if we do have to reform the police, there's just a lot of different angles to come across this. So I appreciate if there's an officer listening to this or anyone familiar with this who has any thoughts about this system at all. I appreciate you reaching out to me and letting me know your opinions. I'm open to having the conversation. You can find me, Rishi B, at Twitter or on Instagram, or the Healthy Schmelty Facebook page, or email therishib@gmail.com.
or you can find all my contact links at rishibi.com. Just to note that since we did this interview, since Jason and I did this interview, they're in California, based off of the success of the San Francisco change, they're thinking about doing similar changes in other areas in California. I saw that San Mateo County is pretty much in process of doing it. And I also saw that over in New Jersey, on the other side of America, a similar initiative was credited for reducing police-involved gun deaths. So, you know, take all this for what you will, and I am very much open to competing ideas. I think it's a travesty that all those protests and all those deaths have been highlighted, the deaths such as George Floyd or Breonna Taylor and et cetera. And still, there has been no meaningful police reform done in our Congress or Senate. It's just a travesty. Let's touch a little bit on the news now. Once again, later on in this episode, to tie things off, I'm going to share an anti-circumcision song from this new show on HBO called How To with John Wilson. But let's touch a little bit on what's going on in the news. Okay, so by now everyone has heard of the insurrection that happened in America's capital on January 6th. I'm not going to touch on the politics of that. There's between the time between my episodes that my last episode was end of December, and because of shenanigans ensuing with the birth of my daughter, took me some time to get this episode out. And so in that time, there's so much analyses and discussion of what that insurrection means. I'm sure you can get the politics from somewhere else. But what I was interested in is how this insurrection ties into the pandemic. I saw an article from NPR titled "The Third Member of Congress Tests Positive for Coronavirus, Blames Capitol Attack Lockdown." And, you know, one kind of thing that comes up a lot in this discussion about the insurrection is how, and just beyond, this is a conversation that's happening everywhere, is how people are in their bubbles. And unfortunately, because of how coronavirus has been politicized, taking precautions and taking social distancing measures like wearing a mask seriously has become kind of a political thing. You would have thought during this insurrection, because Congress, they were meeting, of course, to count the election results, and they didn't know what was going on until the last minute. So then Secret Service kind of rushes them away and packs them all into a room for their safety. And so that's scary on itself, but also we're in the middle of a pandemic. So you would think that at least during this, people would take some precautions. But no, there were apparently multiple members, Republican members of Congress, who refused to wear a mask even when a free one was offered to them. And after that, at least three members of Congress have tested positive. Those are all Democratic members of Congress, and they're blaming the Republicans who refused to wear it. Whether or not that's true, they got it somewhere else, who knows? Actually, we will know probably just based off of contact tracing. But it's safe to say that those Republican members of Congress were probably dumb for not wearing a mask when you're in the middle of trying to keep safe from an insurrection. And that insurrection, by the way, if you watch the video, I was watching that. I thought it was interesting. I did see some quite more people than I expected who were wearing a face mask. But, you know, a lot of the shouty people, they weren't wearing any face masks. And there was actually police who also weren't wearing face masks. And I was wondering what the heck is going on there. But, you know, just a little wrinkle to this. I saw an article from the Wall Street Journal. Because, you know, all these insurrectionists, they thought that they were going to be able to storm the Capitol and then they'd be, they just go home and, you know, eat a cheeseburger and be fine. But they're all getting tagged by the FBI and different agencies now. And they're all like, what? Because they live streamed it, right? So those people are getting caught, obviously, because of them live streaming their illegal activity that they chose to do. But some of these other people who were involved, they're getting caught by facial recognition technology. And you know what might have thrown off the facial recognition technology? A face mask. So if you're not going to wear the face mask to protect your brother man, maybe you'll wear it to protect yourself from the popo. And, you know, this whole insurrection is happening because more important matters are not being discussed. Donald Trump, that monkey funker, this guy, I mean, just recently now, he's like sort of taking actions to start the transition of the White House over to Biden. But like his words for so long after the election results were finalized was how there's like still a gap there that can be addressed. Even though, anyways, so all that talk, that's all that's filtering through in the news. And what that has done is completely ignore how the COVID pandemic in America has gone over 400,000 deaths, and it's estimated to go over 500,000 by May. So it's just a travesty, really. Just the results of communication, a lack of proper communication about the COVID pandemic and what our leaders are choosing to talk about. It's just really sad. If you look at the White House briefings on COVID, there's like giant gaps. So like there was one on November 19th, 2020, and then there was one almost a month later in December. And then there were some regular statements, and then the last one in December was on the 29th. And then the next one after that wasn't until January 12th. And, you know, hospitals are still getting overrun. So it's not like the pandemic just like went away for Christmas. You know, it was there. It was there for Christmas. And so the White House was still doing weekly calls with governors, which I guess is cool. But like, come on, we're all languishing in the wind here, man. And to make matters even worse, check this out. So so the government earlier this week, you know, the one credit that you could probably give Donald Trump's White House is taking the vaccine seriously. You know, they had the Operation Warp Speed. They fast-tracked production of the vaccine. And they were shipping them out quickly and doing the whole emergency authorization approval. So that's like the one credit you can give them is their handling of the vaccine. And then earlier this week, the government issued a statement that they were stockpiling 50% of their Pfizer and Moderna vaccine inventory because they wanted to ensure that there is enough available for the second shot, because you get the first shot, but you need a second shot to settle in your immunity. And so this prompted states to put in orders and strategize their distributions within their states around this strategy that the federal government is doing. Until it came out, thanks to the Washington Post, that the federal government was lying about having a vaccine inventory. Yeah. Like, seriously? Are you monkey funkers seriously with me right now? Yeah. They were lying about that. And so there were some firings, you know. I mean, what does it matter now? This one guy, Alex Azar, the head of the HHS, he resigned. So some other people are taking the hit for this. But it's just like, honestly, you're going to pull this crap now. So, yeah, it's just like, who can you trust? Can you trust anyone in these times? Well, folks, I tell you, there is one person that I trust, and I suggest that you trust too. That person is Dr. Lena Nguyen of the Washington Post and CNN. She's a practicing physician and former health commissioner of Baltimore. She's kind of come out as a health expert, a regular health expert on CNN, and her op-eds now in Washington Post are, she's been putting a lot of content as this pandemic has been going on. And the CDC recently tapped her to make a quick video of how what we now know about the pandemic has evolved since March of 2020. Let's take a listen now.
What's changed about what we know about how coronavirus spreads? The virus that causes COVID-19 is a respiratory virus. Someone who has COVID-19 and is coughing or sneezing expels droplets. If you're close by and breathe in these droplets, or if the droplets land on your nose, your mouth, or your eyes, you could be infected with coronavirus. You could also contract COVID-19 if someone coughs or sneezes into their hand, then touches your hand, and then you touch your nose, your mouth, or your eyes. Over the last several months, scientific studies have shown that this coronavirus is also transmitted through aerosols. These are microscopic particles that people exhale just by breathing and speaking. These tiny aerosols can linger in the air, and if you breathe them in, they can transmit the virus too. This is why wearing a mask is so important. If someone is ill and doesn't know it, the mask helps to trap their droplets and prevent them from spreading in the air. The mask also protects those who aren't infected by stopping the droplets from entering their nose and mouth. Physical distancing is also important. 6 feet is a rule of thumb, with the exact precautions you follow depending on whether you're outdoors or indoors. Outdoors, there is very good air circulation that will quickly diffuse the virus particles. When you're outdoors, it should be safe to keep 6 feet away from others. Indoors, where there is less air circulation, microscopic aerosols could linger for longer in the air. People could be infected beyond the 6 foot distance, especially in poorly ventilated spaces if they're not wearing masks. That's why indoors, you should try to maintain at least a 10 foot distance and wear a mask at all times. Ventilation also helps, so open the windows and doors and run a fan. What about surfaces? In the beginning of the pandemic, everyone was worried about wiping down everything. There have not been documented cases of transmission through surfaces, so it's not necessary to wipe down groceries or wear gloves when opening the mail. However, it's still good practice to wash your hands often and use hand sanitizer after touching frequently used surfaces like door handles and faucets. This coronavirus is highly contagious. We need to keep up the measures that we know work to prevent its spread. Wear a mask, keep physical distancing, avoid indoor gatherings, and wash our hands.
Okay, so that song that we just heard was Meat Grinder by MF Doom. Once again, the recently deceased MF Doom. Rest in peace. That's the last we're going to hear from MF Doom in this episode. We're going to round things out today with a song from a show that I just recently picked up, How To with John Wilson. This is on HBO Max. And the less you know about this show, the better. Just take it from me. It's a comedy show, but it just is a reflection of human life, and it's just perfect for streaming something in the middle of pandemic where there's nothing going on. It's like a slice of life show. There's really nothing else like it, but it's a perfect thing. I suggest starting not with the first episode, but I suggest starting with the one that is How To Covered Furniture with John Wilson. It is just plain ridiculousness, symbolized that it includes the following song that we're about to hear. This is a song that was done by an anti-circumcision advocate somewhere around the New York City area, and it's just... That episode is just crazy. It's going to sit with me forever, I think, in a positive way. In both a positive way and a negative way. But I highly recommend you watch that show if you have HBO. Quick note before we listen to that and round things out, you can get all the information and contact links at rishibeat.com. I appreciate any topics that you think is affecting healthcare that maybe isn't getting enough air. Please reach out to me on Twitter, Instagram. I'm Rishi B on those. There's a Healthy Schmelty Facebook page or therishib@gmail.com. I also appreciate your subscribing to this podcast and leaving a hopefully positive review. I appreciate any support whatsoever. Send episodes to your friends and family. Get the word out there. I appreciate all your support. Thank you very much for listening. We're going to round things out with the following song from, once again, an anti-circumcision advocate for the show, How To with John Wilson.
You talked Bill Gates out of a few hard-earned simoleons to do a so-called study where you cut some Africans. But it's still clear that condoms are the best form of prevention. Now that you've failed, who will heal those angry men? I'm gonna tug and grow my foreskin back again. I'm gonna tug and grow my foreskin back again.